We'll proceed to the fourth case. Cuellar Lopez versus Gonzalez. Mr. Roth.
May it please the court, my name is Charles Roth on behalf of the petitioner, Ms. Maria Cuellar Lopez. The substantive issue in this case involves a question that this court has had occasion to address in a couple of cases, Morales, and Tapia. But before I get to the substantive issue, there's a significant jurisdictional issue as well, which this court has also seen fit to address in a number of circumstances. The leading case in the circuit is Georges versus Ashcroft, in which the court noted that, generally speaking, when there's an affirmance without opinion from the Board of Immigration Appeals, there's no harm in reviewing directly the decision of the immigration judge as opposed to the fact that the Board of Immigration Appeals acted. Four other circuits have addressed the circumstance which is presented here, where the immigration judge gave more than one reason for denying the claim, and one of those reasons is shielded from this court's jurisdictional review. So the Ninth Circuit, the First Circuit, and the Fifth Circuit have said that in that circumstance, where the immigration judge gives more than one reason, more of which is shielded from review, that the proper procedure is to remand the case to the board, for the board to clarify whether or not the discretionary decision was in fact the basis, one of the bases for the board's decision in the case, or whether the board was intending to affirm the immigration judge's decision based on a pure statutory matter.
Could I ask you, I mean, as a practical matter, I mean, I guess there are sort of three grounds that you can identify in this immigration judge opinion, one of them having to do with the alleged break in physical presence, one of them having to do with what he sort of phrases as a statutory reason to think that she fails the good moral character test, and the other is his kind of final bottom line, and even if it weren't statutory, he says, I would find that her use of the falsified papers shows that she's not of good moral character. And that's the one, I take it, that you're conceding is a discretionary call that we can't review. But I'm, you know, a little worried about sending it back to the board for a pointless exercise. Is there actually any reason to think that the board would do anything but say, yeah, we agreed with all three?
Well, the fact that they affirm summarily indicates, generally speaking, that they find this case to be governed by previous board authority. The board authority, which we assume that they felt was governing, was matter of Ramelis, which has been at least modified, if not at least in part overruled by this court, in Morales. Excuse me, the matter of Ramelis is the board decision. And that was the binding on the board at that point. It was a published precedential decision, and the fact that they felt that this case fell under that, anything else was unnecessary.
Okay, so you read the affirmed without opinion procedure itself to refer, in a sense, to grounds that are legal grounds, in a way.
The board has designated a number of different areas that may be appropriate for affirmance without opinion, but certainly where a case is governed by a precedential case authority, that is clearly one of the main areas that would be ripe for affirmance without opinion, because there's no sense in expending their adjudicatory time on the discretionary matters when, if you assume for a moment that Ms. Cuellar is out of luck as a matter of law.
Right. So I understand that, but I guess, you know, when you look at the board's orders, of which we see plenty, it just says the board affirms without opinion the results of the decision below, which I normally read, you know, as, you know, the board thinks it hit the side of the barn, you know, or it doesn't like completely offend them or something like that. But it would be imaginable to me that the board might say that if there was nothing at issue in a case, but let's say a credibility call, and the judge makes a discretionary decision to either credit or not credit certain people, and the board says, what could we possibly add to that? You know, let's just AWO.
Yeah, that's correct. That's right, Your Honor.
Yeah.
There's no per se rule that they couldn't AWO a case for non-legal reasons. But certainly the legal reasons have been one of the stated thrusts of the AWO procedures. And that's, you asked for a reason why we would think that
right,
the decision
yeah.
might be different. And that's one reason, is because at the point that the board issued this decision, the case was at that point governed by Romales. Romales said you apply the Flutie doctrine, the brief, casual, innocent, meaningfully interrupted standard, which this court has found that Congress meant to eliminate. The Flutie doctrine, of course, was in the statute in two different places, in 1101A13 and in section 1254B2, which was subsequently moved to 1229BD. The Flutie standard was eliminated by Congress in 1996 from both places. In 1101, Congress inserted a six-part test for determining whether returning residents are subject to the admission procedures that we have, which include whether they've entered at a point of entry that's not a port of entry, whether they committed some kind of illegal activity outside of the United States, whether they've ever committed certain kinds of criminal activity, and then whether it's less than 6 months. Whereas for returning undocumented immigrants like Ms. Cuellar, the Congress didn't repeat the casual and innocent language of the previous statute because it never made any sense. The innocent, unlawful reentry of an undocumented immigrant was always an oddity, and they eliminated it completely. There's no casual, there's no innocent, there's no meaningful interruptive. The only question in 1229D2 is whether it's brief.
But your question is really, you know, is the hypothetical possibility that the board looked at her, at Ms. Cuellar's case, and just decided, oh, this is under, you know, matter of Romales, end of discussion, you know, we'll rubber stamp the IJ's opinion, and never even thought about the other two grounds, the moral character grounds, particularly the discretionary one. Is that chance big enough that we ought to pester, you know, a very busy board and say, we need you to go back and tell us exactly what you were thinking about?
Well, there's a due process consideration here as well, which this court noted in Georges versus Ashcroft, and which the Ninth Circuit has noted in Falcon, Carice, and their subsequent cases, which is namely that it's not the petitioner's fault that we don't know those answers. The government's adopted this procedure, which leaves entirely opaque the board's reason for the decision. And as a general matter of administrative law, this court reviews the administrative. You need to know what the reasons for the administrative decision were in order to give effective judicial review over the decision.
And do you think it would violate due process for a district court in a Social Security appeal just to say the decision of the Social Security Administration is affirmed, period?
Without giving any reasons?
Without giving any reasons? I'm giving you the example of a district court only because it's the first actual court you get to as opposed to internal agency appeals. Or would it violate due process if this court were to look at this and just issue an order that said petition for review denied, period?
I don't know.
But a lot of courts of appeals, in fact, have procedures under which they issue orders affirming decisions of district courts. In the Fifth Circuit, they'll say, affirmed, see Local Rule 21.
Yes.
End of discussion, you know.
But in this case, there are certainly different considerations. Congress has, by the Constitution of the United States, the authority to regulate naturalization, which then in turn includes immigration. Congress sets the rules for immigration, and they've delegated certain powers to the executive branch. So there are separate considerations when you're dealing with an executive agency determination, which also compel the agency to actually give reasons for its decision. And Ms. Cuellar Lopez,
if I were you, I'd save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, thank you, Mr. Roth. Ms. Wright. That's a great name for an advocate.
May it please the Court. My name is Jocelyn Wright. I'm here on behalf of Respondent, the United States Attorney General. The immigration judge's discretionary determination that Ms. Cuellar lacks good moral character is dispositive, and it's not subject to judicial review, and therefore we ask the Court to dismiss this petition.
But then there is the problem that Mr. Roth has put on the table, that these affirmed without opinion orders speak only to the result. They actually say that. And if it's the result, you could have reached the result that was reached in the immigration judge's case in a couple of different ways. It says the results of the decision below. And so, honestly, I have no way of knowing if the board thought that there was an easy way to do this and they followed their Romales opinion, or whether they bought the idea that people who use false documents are per se people of bad moral character, as opposed to people who wade across the Rio Grande late at night or who otherwise get into this country without following the proper procedures, all of which, of course, are violations of the law. So you can't really say one's a violation or not. But the thing that bothers me here is the utter lack of information we have, and some things that the board might have thought would have been wrong, just as a matter of law, would not have been discretionary.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the good moral character determination in this case had two components, one which was statutory eligibility.
Correct. And
one
so there are some things the board might have been thinking about which might have made this a review immune procedure. There are other things the board might have been thinking about that don't. And it's hard for me to see, when there are multiple grounds like this, why it's such an unbearable burden on the board just to tell us what motivated their thinking.
Well, there are two parts to my response. My first response is that the court can conduct its judicial review intelligently, because as this court has ruled in Georges, and as every other circuit who's addressed a question has ruled, the affirmance of that opinion doesn't violate due process, because the Court of Appeals can review the immigration judge's decision, which is the agency decision designated for review.
It's the agency decision, but here's the problem. Congress has never eliminated, maybe it should, maybe Congress should just completely eliminate the Board of Immigration Appeals. I'm sure it would make your life easier, and just have immigration judges who issue final decisions that can be reviewed only in the federal courts of appeals, heaven forbid. But anyway, I mean, maybe they could do that. They have not. They have left the Board of Immigration Appeals there. And what worries me about taking Georges the next step, which is what you're arguing, and assuming that the board has done absolutely nothing, is that it sounds to me like it's the equivalent of saying Congress has just eliminated the board. Why should they even bother to issue these orders?
But we're not saying that the board has done nothing. What the board has done is reviewed the case.
But we don't know what motivated it to say the result is right.
But I don't think that the court needs to do that. And let me draw an analogy.
But when the Supreme Court looks at things from this court, if we have two alternate grounds and it reviews one of them, it sends it back to find out, you know, whether we would still come up with the same result.
That's correct, Your Honor. But again, and let me draw an analogy to the situation where this panel issues an opinion. If it's against petitioner, and petitioner goes ahead and decides to seek rehearing en banc, the fact that the Court of Appeals denies rehearing en banc without an opinion itself doesn't make that decision reviewable by the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, again, looks at what the panel opinion said. It doesn't matter why the full Court of Appeals decided to deny rehearing, and that's the same exact situation here.
No, it's not really quite the same, actually, because in that instance, the decision of the Court of Appeals, unlike the decision of the immigration judge, is specifically provided for by statute as being the only thing, whereas Georges just says, since the board was trying to weasel out of everything and have it, you know, non-precedential, not reviewable, what the courts did is they essentially bailed the board out and said, okay, we will, contrary to your own regulations, review the immigration judge's opinion as if those really were your reasons. Now, if you look at the board's regulations, they don't even say that. But we have done that in the courts. But your position is that affirmed without opinion is an absolutely meaningless act. That it means that even if there are three different reasons and the only one the board thought about was a reason that's legally wrong, you still go ahead and accept the other reasons, even though the board might have disagreed with two of the reasons.
Well, Your Honor, because the immigration judge's decision is the designated agency decision, there is a decision to review, and so the court can decide whether or not any of the jurisdictional preclusions in the statute apply to any of those
cases.
How
do we know that the board, if the board decided that Romales applies, but the board disagreed on moral character and the board disagreed with the statutory moral character, the board would have issued the AWO it did. But it would have been wrong. It would have been a legally incorrect decision.
Had it said Romales, assuming that it's a legally
hypothetically,
incorrect.
Okay. Hypothetically, if the board had thought the immigration judge was wrong on two things but right on the first, it would have issued the exact decision that it issued, but behind the curtain, you know, it would have rested its decision on one legally wrong point, and that's the problem with this. If the board had done nothing, we would actually almost be better off, but the board does issue these AWOs.
The board agrees with the result, and the result is that the application for cancellation would be denied. But again,
but
that
why? Suppose only for a legally flawed reason.
But that it's irrelevant for purposes of this court's review because the immigration judge's decision sets out the agency's reasons, and I understand.
That's your position. That's
yes.
Your position. I don't agree with you at all that a legally flawed thing where they don't think the other two.
But that assumes that there's a legal flaw, Your Honor.
We
and,
don't know,
but the
do
base,
we?
But the agency's basis for denying cancellation is set forth in the immigration judge's decision, and there are three alternative bases.
But
and
they're
if any
not
of those,
signing off on any of the rationale, the regulations of affirms.
But by designating the IJ's decision.
Clear.
But by designating the IJ's decision as a decision for agencies for judicial review, that is what the court should look at. Now,
well, maybe you should get them to amend their regulations and say what you're saying instead
well,
of what the regulations
the Eighth Circuit,
actually say.
The Eighth Circuit, Nagure, actually has decided, contrary to Lanza in the Ninth Circuit, Drew in the Fifth Circuit, and the First Circuit's decision in Hawood, and it limited Hawood as well, is that the board's decision to affirm that opinion is not a reviewable decision by the courts of appeals. And in fact, if the court of appeals, for example, like the Ninth Circuit does in Lanza, if it remands on these kinds of situations where there's a reviewable and a non-reviewable basis for the court of appeals to affirm the or review the decision below, by remanding it, you're basically rewriting the board's regulations and saying you can't apply the affirmance without opinion. You have to give us an opinion for us to review, whereas this court in Georgia's has already decided, has already said that the affirmance without opinion regulation doesn't violate due process because it can conduct judicial review based on the immigration judge's decision. And it doesn't really matter whether or not the good moral character, the discretionary determination is unreviewable, whether it's unreviewed. The fact is, for judicial review purposes, the salient fact is it's dispositive, it's outside of the court's jurisdiction, and therefore the court should dismiss it for lack of jurisdiction. It doesn't. It makes no difference, absolutely, to Ms. Cuellar whether or not the board affirmed that opinion on that ground or the other ground. So long as this court can review the immigration judge's decisions and say that even if you're right on all the other grounds, one of the dispositive bases that the immigration judge decided this case on can't be reviewed by us, and it's dispositive and can't be disturbed. And because of that, there's no due process violation because there's no prejudice. You would still be denied cancellation at the end of the day because that dispositive undisturbed ruling still stands. And so our position, of course, is that the court should follow Nagure rather than the other circuits and hold that the affirmance without opinion process, the decision by the board itself, is not subject to judicial review.
Could the BIA have ruled against the immigration judge on that fact?
On which fact, Your Honor?
The fact that he found a poor moral character.
It could have, yes.
So that that opinion that you said is unreviewable is reviewable. It's only reviewable by the BIA, you say.
Exactly. The agency has internal procedures that would protect that kind of error.
And what Judge Wood has pointed out is they didn't say they accepted or rejected that. They just said they take the bottom line, but on alternate reasons,
possible. That's correct, Your Honor. But
okay.
I think,
but it is reviewable, is what I'm saying.
It's reviewable by the board, and it would be reviewable in this court.
Review the board.
Excuse me?
So we would have no right to review the board.
Had it ruled on a statutory basis specifically, yes, it would have. And I see that my time is up if the
not
court
quite.
Has.
Not You may want it to be.
Oh. Okay. All right, then I'll keep going. But I do want to say that on that one issue of whether or not the good moral character is reviewable in one aspect and not reviewable in the other aspect. In this case, I don't think it makes a difference because petitioner in her opening brief specifically waived review of any aspect of the good moral character by not challenging it in the opening brief. And I see that my time now is up.
You obviously hold a ranking position within the department on this, I'm well aware of those circuits, especially 2 and 9, that have just enormous problems, backlog problems, especially the second right now. And I know that in this area, even the Deputy Attorney General of the United States is handling an appeal.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So all I would urge is, as I have in high counsel with the department, to the extent we could get, you know, a little, just not big expansive comments from the BIA, but just even a line or two, which could eliminate these kinds of concerns and satisfy us that the set of eyes that, you know, are charged with looking over the IJ's decision came to rest in and reflected on something. So I guess I just wanted to add my voice to others who have just urged that. I do that respectfully, obviously. I mean, I recognize the burden, but it really might help everyone, even though I may be suggesting a little extra work. I'm kind of thinking that if that were applied, we might have less work and less problems down the road.
I'll certainly take it back to the Seventh Circuit's voice to the chorus.
I was with Chief Judge Walker the other day, and we conveyed that to the Attorney General. So,
okay.
So so maybe you could work it up from your level. We're trying to work it down from that level.
I'll certainly do that, Your
Honor. All right. Thank you, Ms. Roth. Mr. Roth.
Thank you, Your Honor. The other reason why the agency can't simply designate the immigration judge's decision as the decision of the agency is because Congress specifies in Section 1101A47B that it's the Board of Immigration Appeals' decision which is the final order of removal in the case. As to the other good moral character factors, this is a lady who's raising 4 U.S. citizen children. She's lived here since she was 1982. She went to high school here, speaks English perfectly. This is a case where we feel like we could convince the agency to exercise its discretion. The agency's already exercised its discretion in placing her into removal proceedings instead of actually expediting her removal as they would have been authorized to do. This is a cancellation of removal is a discretionary tool, an act of administrative grace and mercy, which we keep in order to help certain American citizens who would otherwise be negatively impacted by the removal of their family members.
Do you think that'll outweigh a reasoned assessment by the IJ of credibility during the interview?
Credibility wasn't an issue here, but...
As to the representations made with regard to documentation.
Certainly in an asylum case, credibility ends up being a main... way of losing your case, and as a legal matter, no, if we lose on the law, we lose on the law, but it doesn't make sense to interpret this statute, and I see my time's expired.
No, you may conclude your thought.
It doesn't make sense to interpret this ameliorative statute in such a hyper-technical way as to prevent individuals like Ms. Quayer from having her case heard. I thank the court.
Thank you. Thank you to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.